The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
And folks, you're listening to The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian. It's your boy, Billy, back at it with another episode. I hope you guys are keeping well, keeping safe amidst the pandemic. And today in studio, we have Jesse Kimotho, class of 2014 in Yale University, doing a double major. You're actually the first person I've come across doing a double major. Please tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm the first and the last. So hi, listeners. My name is Jesse Njoguna Kimotho. I'm Class of Alliance 2014. Was the medical captain in 2014. Livingstone House, go Livingstone. Long live Livingstone.
Long live Livingstone.
Long live Livingstone. I am currently a senior at Yale University studying a double major in fine arts with a concentration in graphic design and political science with an interdisciplinary concentration in African studies.
Eish, umesikia hizo.
I also started a small startup around 3 years ago called MedBit that helps small clinics book and manage patients in the Thika and Roiro area. I am also a podcaster as well. I have my own podcast. Shout out to Sisi Watatu Podcast. Uh-huh. We're doing our season 3. So once you're done with Billy's episode, you have to hop over to our episode, to our podcast as well, and check out our new season. I am an artist. I make a lot of art, a Christian, and on my free time, I like walking my four dogs. I have four dogs. Yes, I know I have a problem, but they are four and I love them so much.
I mean, when I tell the listeners that I experience a lot of imposter syndrome, people don't know why, but look at this. My LinkedIn profile is literally probably 3 lines at most, when some people can give you pages on pages of CVs, yet we're barely 25 years old. So today in studio, we're going to be talking about servant leadership and whatnot, and to hear about Jesse's life. So as you can tell, Jesse will be talking a lot in this episode about his lifting in Bush. Vying for a position is called lifting. So when I hear about his lifting position, and for him, whether it was all about getting the fame and the fame and the power, or was it more about serving the community around him? As the school motto says, strong to serve. And a lot of people tend to go contrary to that instead of actually serving the people. So when I hear for him, was all this just a means to an end, or was it actually the process of helping people and even becoming a greater person in society out here?
I didn't know at the time, and this was in Form 4, that the person I was staying with then had a phone.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm getting myself mixed up. This was in Form 3, because I remember we are Form 3 cops and we are doing our rounds. And this guy, I was a Form 3 cop, I would stay there with Lee Mwangi, who we still do a podcast with. Lee used to sleep. I think I used to sleep on top. He used to sleep on the bottom, which was also against strange, because, you know, no one ever wants to sleep on the top bunk. I kind of liked that information. There was a kind of privacy it gave you, you know. Plus, no one would sit on your bed.
On your bed, yeah.
So the guy I was staying with that side, he had a phone. I didn't even know he had a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, at the very least, if I knew, because how I found out was, Form 3 cops are doing their rounds, and they were like, I think, you know, there are those guys who really loved that kind of, I think in their heads they were in an action movie. They were like, let's go and bust these people who, like, have phones or are doing illegal things. Like, we have a lead on, and they're like, hey, Twende, now you're on duty, and now you have to go. Now, you know, when they come for you, you can't say, like, hey, no. I used to get away with saying, like, hey, me, I'm going to the sanatorium. To actually help people for real, you know. But then that day, I had to come because, and as I found out, was this guy had a phone. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about it. And I was like, okay, where are we going? And they were like, to your cube. And I'm like, why? You know, Like we have a lead on someone there who has a phone. And I remember he got beat up so bad until he peed on himself.
Oh, snap.
And like I remember looking, and I'm like, one of the things I think I have to regret is like I never said anything then. No, I never, you know, people ask me, Jesse, did you know he had a phone? And I answer truthfully. Like, I don't know if I should have lied. Should I have said yes?
But if you did, what difference would it have made?
I think it would have gotten, I don't, you know, there's that two things would have happened. He would either have been absolved, you know, I think it would have incriminated me, but kind of taken a lot of the blame off of him.
Uh-huh.
But then at the same time, I wasn't sure that that was the right move to make because, like, truthfully, I didn't. If I did, I don't think this would have happened. I mean, I wouldn't even have encouraged it. A lot of people had phones in school, but the policy was as long as you gave it to a teacher, like they kind of kept it for you. Or like, I don't know if it was a prefect or a teacher. I didn't have a phone per se. Like I remember when I was the best student in Science Congress, I did an agriculture project. Can you imagine? And they gave us a prize of a phone.
Mm-hmm.
An Intel something phone, a smartphone. And I went back with it to school, stayed with it for like a day. And then I think I gave it to my parents when they came to visit me like that weekend. So I got back to school on Wednesday. By Saturday, my folks had gone home with it.
Uh-huh.
So me, I was like, I fail to understand. Like, you know, I mean, you would think, again, if you can't change the rules of the game, you need to learn how to play it. You know, like if you told me, at the very least, I would have done something.
Yeah.
I don't want this to sound like blame shifting. But you can kind of see how now that happened. But at the same time, like, it was wrong. They should never have beaten this guy up. I remember looking at him and I was like, oh boy, Cliff. I felt responsible. I felt like I was part of the problem. That was one of the times, like, the identity of being a cop. I've never not wanted to be a cop so bad.
Uh-huh.
Like that one time, I've been many things. Like we were hailed as bell ringers. I remember there was a time Tuliamsho like midnight, because someone rang a bell 5 minutes late, and we crawled from like the podium all the way till the third lecture room, on the three-story science lab. Just be, you know, bell ringers also had their own share of like weird nonsense going on.
Yeah.
That's why even me, when I came to Yale, I'm like, hey man, I'm not going to get into a frat and be hazed by a white person. That is not my point.
You had your fair share.
Yeah. So, but you know, a lot of messed up stuff was happening. But even for the bell ringer, you know, at least that was me. The damage was being inflicted on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a fact, and I know Wyron, my friend, again, who went ahead to become one of the coordinators of the bell ringers, even when he would kind of enact his hazing rituals on them, like me and him would smile and look at each other and be like, this is all bark and no bite. I think they knew that.
Yeah.
The bell ringers from his ear. And we were like, okay, we're just doing this to formalize the fact that what we're doing is serious. It wasn't like no one was being beaten up. You know, it was very pleasant. It was very serious. It was very, you know, he was very much in it, you know, there was that respect kind of given, but I really respected the fact that, you know, I had friends like Wyron who could command respect. Wyron, and I don't know if it's my portion to say this or not, Wyron didn't try, but let me tell you, there's no one else in Alliance, very few people who I respected less or more respected more than Wyron Kinyua.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that notion of being able to have power, have a leadership role and not misuse it.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather not, I don't know how you'd call it. I mean, not encumber or burden the people you are meant to serve. Remember, leadership is service. It's not lording. You know, you're not a lord.
You're not the one to call the shots. You know, this. I see that's what a lot of it is about. Like, guys just want the leadership position to be privileged, to just enjoy the privileges of walking and wearing a trouser and eating for 30 minutes when everyone eats in 5 minutes. But no one thinks about the responsibility that you should actually carry. Because my mom says, how is it that, like, for example, when I sleep for too long, she's like, you guys, your school motto is strong to serve, but you're the one sleeping the most. like make it make sense, you know?
Yeah, by the make it make sense. So for me, like how I made it make sense. So like, I will tell you, like when I was the Med Cup, the sun had hot showers and me and all my friends used those hot showers. It had a shower with a heater, my friend. Like, okay, yes, you aren't sick, but imagine ya shule, stima ya shule. Bro, oga kuwa msafi. No, no one will ever be like, too clean. You must have used the hot shower in the sanatorium. No. And yeah. I would, it was so weird because during my tenure, you'd often find people, because really, like, I used to shut the sanatorium down quite late because people, be after preps and like even before lights out, yeah?
Yeah.
They would have to come and take drugs, bro. Like if someone needs meds, you know, meds is something you take not because you want to, unless you're a drug addict. Meds is something you take because you need.
Yes.
Me, I will never let it ever never be said that someone ever came to me for medical attention and they didn't get it. You know, In fact, I used to pick fights with prefects because I'm like, bro, if someone, even if they're lying, tells you they came from sun at night, let them go. If I ever hear you punish someone, we will not even talk with you or anyone. You know, you're going to have personal problems with me and I will go and make as much noise as I can to the administration. Mm-hmm. You know? So to kind of come back to the idea of how to command, you know, it's kind of service leadership is what I think the official phrase for that is. I saw this guy being beat up and I'm like, hush. No, something has to give. And I made a commitment to myself that day, like, Mimi, let it never be said that I was part of that.
Yeah.
I would never want anyone to stand up after Alliance and stand up and say, Jesse Kimodo, I remember the day you kicked my ribs. Mm. The day you slapped me, no. I think you can still, you know, And that's, and like kind of looking at that, but it's, again, it's important to remember that these prefects were also going through hell. I remember even me, hey, bro, there was a day after we rose, tumeingiza yo PCR, tumesimama for 7 hours. And what I usually liken it towards is, you see, cops are treated, they treat people very badly in Kenya.
Yeah.
They are the cartel, they are the problem, you know? But you see these cops, one, Karao is underpaid. Bro, a Karao has like a salary of 30K, 20, you know? And remember in Kenya, if they are paying tax, like all of us are paying, you're paying a payee of 30% of your salary, my friend. Are you seeing?
Yeah.
So effectively, you're earning like 20K. To NHIF, to NSSF, you're earning like 15K. Bruh, already you have loans you've taken from the police circle now. Because you know you have to find a way of living. How can you live on 15,000, Bob? A whole grown man with a gun and kids and a wife. You're living in a metallic hut in a police station.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you know, you have to exist outside the system. And I think that's what you see. I think that's no excuse still, because, you know, one would argue that MCAs are well paid. So, you know.
Yeah.
You are taught. You go to Kiganjo. There's this podcast I listen to. It's called The Grey Pool Pod. And they once brought this police officer who was, and I up to then I hadn't even fully considered this, but this guy was explaining about the kind of garbage and the kind of treatment they go through at Kiganjo. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
They made you into monsters, you know?
Yeah.
So, yes, they know they're doing an injustice to you. When I was at my shop in Kisii, and they were kind of trumping up charges, and like 7 cops come, they want a big fat bribe of 10K. I'm like, why the hell would I give you money? You know, why would I do this? I know that these people, okay, half of them, maybe they are drinking that cash, but maybe even them, they're drinking because their life is unbearable. And their life could even be worse if they didn't have that job. Aya. You're looking at the other half. These are people maybe who don't have, like, you know, they live. If you ask them to take you to their house, they couldn't. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I get it. You're doing something wrong. I'm not going to, like, go down quietly, by all means, no. But the problem would never be fixed if I just keep on giving you 10K. Or, you know, if we make, the only way we can make the police better is if we make these people's lives worth living, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I looked at this cop issue at Alliance. Is this guy is being taught and told that you become a brute. You become someone who thinks it's cool, someone thinks they can get away with beating up other people's children, with, you know, I wish that, like, it was even a more tame form. But, like, let's be real, a lot of stuff happened that shouldn't have happened. I even remember, I have a friend of mine that we talk about this in Georgia. I'm like, this guy, I remember even, but then again, there's another thing. I know there was a time when they were doing like manhunts for like gay people. And I was like, are we trained professionals to do this? You know, I wish that it came from a report that, okay, not I wish someone was sodomized, no, but I wish that that was the basis of that. You know, you go after people for weird reasons. You know, you go after people, like, that's not your place, bro. Like, and a lot of this time, these cops suffered. Their grades were bad. They were down.
It was like that. It was always like that. It was always the ones who want to disturb. Academically, in a struggle. Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of these guys, it has an effect. I'm not trying to create a formula, but I'm trying to say that's not how you do leadership. I don't think that's how you do leadership. And a lot of the time, especially with such cops, you'd find people telling them, wewe tunafunga na wewe.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, even for a lot of these cops, after the fact, because I stayed in Juja, I think, a while, for the better part of last year, because I moved from home to Juja, just so I can be around people my age. And, like, I really like the environment there. I really needed space. But I saw and I met a lot of old boys and we talked. And you know, that kind of hate carries forward. I've met people
to date,
and they messed. I mean, obviously, that whole issue of the prefects, yes, it needed to be addressed. But I felt the larger issue, you know, there's this term called palliative care. Palliative care is when you treat the symptoms of a disease, usually one that's incurable, but not the disease itself. So, yes. Like, for a simple example, is if I had cancer.
And it's,
and it's manifesting like as a cough. Or, you know, let's just say I have a cough. Yeah, you treat the cough just because it's so much harder to treat the cancer, or the cancer is incurable, right? So you make someone's condition while they have the disease much more bearable. So, and that's what I felt like the response was. I mean, yes, well, by all means, like, these kids do not need that power. They don't even need it. They're misusing it horribly. They almost kill a guy, you know?
Yeah.
But that particularly doesn't solve the issue that existed. Mm-hmm. Because, and for a lot of the time, if you look back and you see, you know, I mean, the kind of thing that they wanted to preserve or kind of promote, I don't think it really happened. You know, you still have now, you know, cops, yes, they had their uses. You know, and again, I'm not trying to defend their actions. I think what I'm trying to do is get us to look back at the larger picture is, yes, of course, say no to all kinds of violence method to all students. But, like, we need to address the big issue in the room is that these schools are understaffed. These prefects are taught malice.
Mm-hmm.
The system itself we need to look at that with a magnifying lens and say, how do we solve for a solution that is sustainable, that actually benefits these students, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, Billy. I'm the old guard. You're the new guard. You think Alliance? Of course, Alliance was better off with. I think they abolished prefecture, right?
Okay, not abolished. Not abolished. Like, there's no prefecture. It's there, but definitely more watered down, more run down than when it was your time. Like, so definitely the powers are not there anymore. So, for example, me as a prefect having a bit of power. Okay, in our time, there was no beating, there was no any violent thing, any quote-unquote corporal punishment, but we still had the privileges. So we had the closed doors, we had PCR, we could walk, we could, you know, whatnot. But now, there's literally none of that. They share the prep rooms with commoners, Form 4s wear trousers anytime, Form 4s walk as well. What else? There's no morning. Okay, in my time, there was morning prep. So there's no morning prep anymore. So the prefects also feel like they don't have power. And so no one is doing anything about it. So the school is, you know, it is what it is. Hakuna haraka. No.
I think I think, look, I'm not going to try and say that now people should wear shorts and all of that. Yeah, I think there was a role prefect served in, I'm not trying to say it's absent, but I think, of course, and by the way, like, by all means, Alliance is cold, wear trousers, you know?
Yeah.
I think you need to give these guys a meaningful platform. And yeah, and again, like, don't beat people up. Sorry, it's just worth mentioning that a lot of these privileges aren't privileges per se. It's like inconveniencing the rest of the school for the benefit of a few. You know, it's a very aristocratic, if you asked me, you know. So you have the bourgeoisie prefer to, you know, especially that whole issue of PCR. I was never a big fan of that to begin with. But I think it's important to recognize that, you know, that these roles should have evolved in a more sane way. You know, I look back at even at Yale, you know, it's worth noting that student leaders here, they actually do put in a fair amount of work. Mm-hmm. I was like the organizing secretary of the Yale African Students Association. And I mean, while there weren't any particular perks, like no one paid me a salary, nothing like that. Like, I recognized that this was a position that I could later leverage to get networks, you know, much easier than maybe a normal like person who was not in the board could. And it was a position that I volunteered myself and put myself up for election for. I had to write a manifesto. I had to, you know, I wish that there was a kind of more democratic evolution, you know, it not felt like a UN intervention.
Like a more, like the, I feel like the system should have evolved more to a civilized setting, not like abolish everything, but just refine those things like the beating and whatnot, but now not watered down so much so that like it has no meaning anymore.
Yeah, because I think we all enjoyed the idea of rising, of lifting. You know, I think that's one thing maybe that I really found enjoyable as someone who kind of semi-successfully went through it, or successfully.
Mm-hmm. Successfully.
Yeah, because I really enjoyed the fact that it, you know, and those are skills that I use today. I think I consider myself quite a good conversationalist, you know? Uh-huh. Like, I learned how to talk to people, how to navigate, and, you know, the corridors of power. I learned how to serve people. I learned leadership. It's very important if you learn leadership, especially if it's service leadership. You know, by simply taking away opportunities for service leadership in school, or kind of showing them, you know, it's that these kind of roles, even in class, no one wants to take. Like, I know class reps are paid, but like, would you really be a class rep if there are no perks? You know what I mean? It just sounds like more work, you know? If you really show that there is value, if you create like a tangible, real value for such roles, I don't think people would, you know, shy away. In fact, it would be something everyone would want to be. People would want to serve more. People would want to, you know, to become leaders. You know, because at the time, if a leader meant beating people up, then I mean, even I had to acknowledge that I don't want that.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if there was this loss of ambition, because that is what I think most all boys are like, oh, Alliance imeanguka. It's that, you know, there's that loss of ambition kind of followed by like this dip in grades, I guess. I'm saying this as I'm laughing. So like, So I, you know, when I look at that, if I had to change something, I would definitely change that. As a med cap, you know, like, cause even me as a form three prefect, most of my duties were related to the medical aspects of things. I remember part of what I tried creating as a medical captain manifesto / election campaign is I actually went ahead and dewormed the whole school.
For real?
Yeah, I dewormed the whole school. I remember asking the nurse, like, nurse, do we not have dewormers, man? And she's like, we have boxes upon boxes of them. And I was looking at her, I was like, why are we not deworming people, man? Have you seen the kind of nonsense people are eating out here? Especially in that, hey, people need. And I remember telling people, hey, please, we are going to do a mandatory deworming. If you don't want to, you know, like, we are going to start with Form 1A, Form 1B. Form 4 was essentially me. Let me tell you how I enjoyed my privileges, though. I would write myself leave out sheets. I would write myself medical leave out sheets and go and eat lunch at Kikuyu Hospital sometimes. It was quite cheap. Like, the food there was 50 bob. sana sana hizo siku za ugali
na githeri.
So it wasn't like a common practice. Maybe like I did that like 4 or 5 times in a semester. Sometimes I would write myself leave outs and cheats, just you know, to allow myself the space to go outside alliance. And I realized that was kind of dangerous, especially as a student who didn't have a means of communicating with the outside world. You know, so it was, I think, but you know, again, it was something that didn't hurt people. Like when I broke the rules, again, no one got hurt. I don't ever think there was a day that at now I'm exercising my privilege and then who, you know?
Yeah.
So it was fun. I had a lot of fun. By that time, I was like, you know, MedCap, St. John's. I was kind of coming to my end of my time at Alliance, but it really rocked.
But then now, like, this whole thing about servant leadership, is it as easy as people make it seem? Because especially that, like, you'd even see in our government. Why would MCAs, tell me why, MCAs will be given a tender to get Carl?
Mm-hmm.
And you see for them, literally, what work do MCAs do that they deserve to get such things? And you see even in our government system, guys would just, you know, will make manifestos, I want to be the change, whatnot. And when they're in position, they now want to drive on the opposite side of traffic, but they won't implement bills to improve roads. And so you see, everyone wants to call out that privilege of the leadership, but really don't want to be the servants they promise to be.
I think it's greed. You know, mm-hmm. I feel at that level, I think it's greed. Kenya, especially, you see this, there's a class I'm taking this semester that studies nationalism, which is that kind of a sense of pride in the sovereignty of your state, kind of like how Americans are always like, oh, America is the greatest country in the world. And, you know, Tanzanians, for whatever reason, are also like, Tanzania is such a great country. It's way better than, and they'd like using bad, you know, connotations for Kenya, like our neighbors somewhere up north. And you go to Kenya and there really is no sense of sovereignty. The last time Kenya, I think, experienced what is known as a wave of nationalism is when it got independence. In fact, for a lot of African countries, that's the only time where you see that big push for self-governance, for pride in the state, you know, siku za ujamaa. And before Kenyatta, the original one, not this Jaden one.
Yeah.
Before he was still Harambe, before people realized, hey, this guy he has stolen together with the white people, the colonialists. And it's we have such a long history of never really being free. You know, people go in and they're like, I'm gonna grab as much as I can for myself. You know, even the people who talk a big game on service leadership, Moha, ule wa jichopevu. You know what I mean?
Sad story.
But I don't think it's a function of the throne. And by that, I mean, if you look at leaders such as Kivutha Kibwana, there are people out there who are actually moving.
Yeah.
You know, he's an old man. You know, there's nothing. You know, there are people go like, youth leadership, youth will come and change. Oh, they came, they didn't change.
They didn't change.
We put thugs like Babu Owino there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think people really... And that's why I guess people are really surprised when they see someone practicing some kind of form of service leadership or servant leadership. Is they're like, bro, ukosho itawak, you know.
Because I ran an Instagram poll, I think a few weeks ago, and asked guys, so guys, if your parents were corrupt, would you rat them out? And most guys were like, Zay. So if you had the opportunity to be corrupt, would you take the opportunity or not? And surprisingly, you know, we always say we're the generation of change, we're going to bring change. But more than 90% said, kusema kweli, Rosafi, they'd actually be corrupt. And I asked them, so why? And guys were like, you know, if I'm not corrupt, obviously someone else will be corrupt. Like, you have to bend to the system and fall in place with what everyone else is saying, or else you'll be the outcast or something will happen to you. So a lot of guys actually are... on the ground, like on Twitter, they'll complain, oh, corruption, these thieves. But if you ask them, introspectively, what would you do? A lot of them are saying, ah, kusema kweli roho safi. And you know, we always use this word, to be honest, you know, to normalize something that shouldn't be normalized.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever said that. Like, we've had this, a popular argument I have with a friend of mine is why I can't just like Kahusha's music.
Mm-hmm.
I can't like vocally, maybe the child is innocent or blameless, but I can't see our COVID monies kind of being used that way. You know, I think that is just goes to show how systemized the rot is, you know?
Yeah.
I've been there. I've been a broke Kenyan student before. Before I came to Yale, I audited UoN ARC for a whole year, my friend. I've seen what students experience. And even after, while I was in Juja, I remember one thing that I say is, I remember once I saw a friend, like we bought cookies, we ate cookies. He took the cup that the cookies came in, washed it, and I realized, oh, these cookies, by the way, they are now a cup.
Mm-hmm.
This was like a year ago, yeah?
Yeah.
And I was like, higher, you know, the state or the economy that exists here is one of, you know, watu wamekanyagwa sana, paka like, ay, you know, kumbe, that's where we are at. You know, it wasn't like, hey, bro, we can't afford a glass. And it was like, no. This is what is there. And now we are going to use it like a cup.
Yeah.
I think that people have been starved, especially knowing the resources Kenya has. You know, you have to put it into context. You think people don't live their lives knowing that 2 billion is out there.
Every single day.
You know? And I think what is happening is, as a leader, and this is what happens now. Yeah, you remember in Alliance, I think this is the perfect phenomenon. If you didn't have a cop there at the front, making sure that those lines going into the dining hall were straight, there's a kind of chaos that ensues when you yourself as a leader, you're not organized.
Yes.
People see that, and you know, they see you letting someone get away with something that makes no sense. You know, like someone cut the line, or they're speeding forward into the dining hall, or they aren't keeping the line straight. And then they themselves go like, I also want to eat. And it becomes like a domino effect. And what happens is, like, especially with people pushing each other on the line, you know, it becomes this thing where it's like a force of around 20, 30, 40 boys are pushing down on each other. And that often even leads to people getting hurt, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of look at it that way, is that we have then been taught by our leaders, look, or not even by our leaders, I think it's, again, not trying to blame shift, but even by ourselves, we have allowed ourselves to kind of look at others and go like, eh, kunafaa kuenda hivyo lakini hakuendi hivyo. You push. And someone pushes you. And you know, and it pushes all the way down. Because you can imagine this cop, maybe at their core, them, they just want to live a good life and be happy and build their mother house. But they're like, ah, kimeumana, kimeumana. Izo bribes. Yeah. So I think a lot of the time, because even when I was in like the remand cell, when those cops had done me dirty, I was like, ay, man. And they were like, bro, we don't have a choice. If I don't do this, my OCPD, my OCS, at the end of the day, they're going to demand the money that I was supposed to come get from you, from me.
Yeah.
You know? So we have taught ourselves. We have kind of, the system has kind of collapsed in on itself.
And is there a way to reform it, or do we conform?
That's a good question. That's not the first time I've been asked that question. I think politics is not that easy, especially when you understand how the state works. You know, I always used to wonder, like, for example, I mean, if we are at such a bad place, why doesn't the best country in the world, the US, come in and just save us? You know?
Yeah.
I think you need to realize that this, you know, we exist in a complex society. Mm-hmm. And there are rules that are supposed to protect us that have been turned against us and aren't. Like, for example, the fact that Kenya is a sovereign state, it means that these people can continue to plunder and loot without the interference of other states. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And those other states as well. We don't live in a utopia, my friend. The US often acts in its own self-interest. Mm-hmm. You know? you have other people also doing bad things at their own level.
Yeah.
I think what we can do at the very base level is do good. I know that sounds really basic. I think that's a good place to start. My mom raised me a certain way. My dad raised me a certain way. And I am mainly what I am now because of them. As simple and as banal as that sounds, I was made into this Jesse. At some point, they didn't stop making me because their influence in my life is still felt. But I also began making myself. And if we can make more people like Billy, like Jesse, like people who recognize and are willing to say no, and people like us who are, no, my art that I make, I never thought it would get such reception. I never thought like a picture of Kenyatta kissing Tom Mboya on the cheek as Judas kissed Jesus
would get ever. So much traction. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I realized that I can force people to interact with certain truths.
Yes.
You know, that's now what the kind of end product of service leadership is. Like if you ever, if like a year ago, even before I made that piece, you told me that now my place in this world was to make pictures of men kissing other men. I mean, like, I'm like, and you are saying people will vibe with that. And then you say, yes, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. I look at you like a madman. But really, our job is to, in our own kind of way, where we can exercise this servant leadership. You know, let me give you an example, even why what I'm saying makes sense. You know that Mugo Kibati somewhere out there went to Alliance and he is the leader of one of Kenya's leading companies? Do you think Mugo Kibati is exercising service leadership? That's a question maybe Mugo Kibati should answer. Do you think the guy who is the head of CBK, like Patrick Njoroge, who's one of is a Yale alumni. For me, I think if he exercised service leadership as the governor of CBK, that would be really interesting, don't you think?
It would. I mean, and you know, for them, especially that they have that influence, I mean, why not? When you see, I remember going for an old boys dinner when we're in school. You know how those old boys dinner, then prefects. So that the in my year it was like Pentagon were called to go to, I've forgotten the name of the hotel. Either Sarova, I think Sarova or something. And so Kivuta Kibwana is there talking, and you know, you can feel someone who genuinely wants to change society, someone who's genuinely in touch with society and not just selling to you a narrative that didn't even make sense. Someone who just, you know, Shikai post TV, he switches up and everything is, because you know, even with Kenya, this is election period. You'll see, the people are going to the villages, going to campaign, selling them these narratives. But you just know, in the next, after our party kitty, things switch up. And like, if these guys were to exercise the servant leadership as they are preaching as per now, as you can currently see them doing, going to the streets, changering for churches, and doing the actual work, you know, I feel like things would be much better. Things would be very different.
Yeah, I think so. Like for me, I think, and even for you, Billy, like this, your podcast, I think it's a sort of way to exercise, you know, servant leadership or service leadership in the sense that you're creating a space where people can come and learn and become better. You know, this in itself, by the way, imagine if everyone did this in their own special way, try to reach out, you know. I'm not trying, you know, there's that mentality of, oh, dunia ikifagiliwa, kila mtea fagie compound yake, will be a better place. You know, if it sounds really dumb, but like, if you really think about it, that's what even you see a lot of, even for me, here, I think nationalism and that kind of American exceptionalism is about, is about, and it's the same thing, especially when you see a lot of guys going like, oh, I went to Alliance. Imagine every time you said I went to Alliance, you had to really back it up with some really dope thing you've done since you left, you know?
Yeah.
It would be crazy, right? Like, you know, and the same thing I see here, a lot of the time white people are like, where's your mask? You know, like, I mean, Corona is real, you know, like, and they own it. They own it. And it's like, it's something that feeds into itself. By virtue of the fact that you consider yourselves great, other people consider yourselves great, and you treat yourself as someone who is great, you know, the problem with Kenya is it's lip service. It's I went to Alliance until thing X. I went to this until thing X. I'm an MCA who serves the people until money is put on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that answers your question right there.
And have you seen this? Did you see this? This article someone did about how Alliance has failed Kenya.
Yeah, I did read it. I think, was it the Daily Nation or the Standard?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was actually pretty impressed with the article because, again, I really like that narrative of, you know, the best then, and you're the leaders, then you've led us into do. And
it's yeah.
It's true. I own it. I went to Alliance and I am part of the problem. Or rather, I'm trying to not be part of the problem anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's important to consider.
Yeah, because again, what do you have to show to this tag that I went to Alliance? You know, you can't just, for me, I always feel like you can't just throw the tag around. I mean, for some people, as I keep on saying, probably it gave them a sense of meaning, this I went to Alliance thing. But beyond that, do you have anything to show that you actually went to Alliance? Are you going to make an impact in your society and be the strong to serve that guys will be like, yeah, for sure, this is someone who went to Alliance? Because I remember even joining Alliance and looking back at a certain brand of old boys who proudly wear the tag of going to Alliance, but also in their actions, in their deeds, in the things they do, project that. For example, you yourself, the way you do your art so meticulously and always have, you're not just doing art for the fun of it. Okay, you're doing it for the fun of it as well, but there's a message you're also trying to portray, especially for someone who's gone to one of the best unis in the world. And so you're trying to redeem your country by showing it a side of it that guys don't want to talk about per se, that even made you and your father be at loggerheads, you know, such stuff, rather than just being like, I went to Alliance and so, you know, what makes you stand out? What, you know?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, like, there's a thing that people fail. But you see, at the same time, I think there's this kind of black savior mentality. A lot of black people here from the diaspora come and get and bring home, like, oh, now we are the ones to come and save the motherland. No, I think this is different. And the power of this is, the power of a name is very important to consider. The power of a name, when you say I went to Alliance, you're either drawing power from, or you're lending power to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same way if a small young kid comes and tells you, "Usincheze niko mongiki."
Mm-hmm.
You will either be afraid for two reasons. You'll either be afraid of the kid because of their size and stature. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You'll be afraid because you know what mongiki are capable of.
Yes, you know the power that resides there.
Yeah. Similarly, you might laugh because, yes, you are part of mongiki, but my friend, have you seen your body? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important for people to consider whether they're giving part, whether you're actually contributing or taking from.
Yes.
You know? Otherwise, we'll end up with politicians who go to speak and throw mud at each other and at people's funerals, you know?
Yes.
I think it's interesting. I don't ever think of my art as saving people. I think I do it out of, it's researched. I spend a lot of time doing my research. I spend a lot of time thinking, what am I trying to tell people? So that when I do communicate, when I do hit, when I do even put my, I went to Alliance there, you go like, yes. In fact, you know, people go like, yes, yes, you did, my friend.
Mm.
A lot of the time, I used to wonder, there's this guy I remember from high school. His name was Julius Pambo. Pambo was a very, like, proud, you know, sort of like the quintessential Luo individual you'd expect to find. I don't think he has any problem with me kind of mentioning this. And people loved to hate Pambo.
Mm-hmm.
Because, man, Pambo was loquacious. He would use, you know, the big words, he would threaten people, but you see, Pambo could back it up. Pambo passed his classes, Pambo went to ALU, Pambo now probably has a, you know, no one can ever go and say, that Pambo guy is too proud. Why? Because he can back it up. Mm. So I think all we're asking you to do is, you went to Alliance, yo, back it up. You know, show us why we should respect you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, there's a reason why when I say I went to Yale, people go like, oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's because they know what Yale does. It's not even me. Yes, I'm a G in my own right. I accept. I acknowledge. But I am now in a space surrounded by other people doing something, a lot of good out there, you know? And that also gives strength to me now. I am drawing strength from the name Yale. And Yale, in part, also draws strength for me. When they give me grants to go out there and do a lot of cool things, to do research, to, you know, to do my startup, they do it because they know, like, yes, we are sending this guy out there because, one, we know, he can deliver, and two, because he adds power back to our name. So it's very important, you know, as someone who is in that role, you think, you know?
Mm-hmm. So even as we wind up, Jesse, what do you think are your last sentiments on this issue of servant leadership and even as our role as young people in the society? Because I've seen your latest art of the police brutality and all of that. So in regards to that, what are your last sentiments?
That's a heavy question. That's a loaded question. I think I'm going to encourage everyone out there, if there's something you want to do that if in your own sort of capacity or way that you want to do, go ahead and do it. I remember for the t-shirts, when I started, like, I really didn't even want to do them. I really didn't want to make art. I really didn't want to get into it. I remember I did it because at that time I was coming out of like a kind of a weird but very tough breakup on me. A relationship wise, like I just broken up with my girlfriend then. And I was like, life has to move on, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that time, like, I was like, I remember telling myself that day when I was going to sleep is I'm going to surprise myself.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning, get in touch with a good friend of mine, one of my mentors, one of the people I look up to. His name is Rosen Ian.
Mm-hmm.
At Alliance, and he was actually the best art student at Alliance in the year before mine.
He did my cover art. Shout out to him.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to reach out to Rosen because I've admired his work for so long and I've supported him for a while. I was like, I'm going to tell him, Rosen, show me how to put my art on a t-shirt and I'm going to make it for myself and I'm going to wear my art. And I remember even the Betrayal of Mboya piece is, I did it even 4 months or 2 months, sorry, 2 months before I even printed the t-shirt. So you can imagine I had been sitting on that for 2 months and people didn't know and I hadn't put myself out there. And I said, you know what? It's time. It's time for me to do it, to stop caring what people think, to stop comparing myself to other people. It's time for me to go back to the me that I loved and I remembered in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up and that day I went into town. I got on a mat, went to town, went to Kikorok Road. That's the kind of graphic design capital of Kenya, of Nairobi. Got a t-shirt from King's Collection for 450 shillings. And I remember that day I was with Richard Okenye. And we had gone to print some material, some stickers, some posters for our podcast. And we printed that, put that print on that t-shirt. It was so expensive. I think it cost me almost 1,000 bob. And I was like, ay, ay, ay. And I put it there. And I remember as the print came out and I looked at that t-shirt, I felt scared. I felt like, oh my goodness me, what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
But I was excited and I felt something I hadn't felt in a really long while. I felt that rush of becoming a prefect. The same rush that I felt back when I rose.
Uh-huh.
I felt it then when I saw that t-shirt. And I said, how have I been denying myself this feeling for such a long time?
Mm-hmm.
And I decided from that moment on to go full force. Yeah, do I stumble? Yes. Do I backslide? Yes. But I have always reminded myself, yo, it worked at Alliance. It worked when I had nothing, when I was nothing. It worked when I was a little 15, 16-year-old guy trying to deworm people, trying to deworm a whole school.
Uh-huh.
It's going to work now. And I have been kind of living by that principle ever since. It's not failed me. Not yet, it hasn't.
Uh-huh.
So why should I stop, Bill?
True. Thank you so much for hopping on this podcast and giving us your thoughtful and wise insights. I think even for me, as you can tell, I didn't speak much because sometimes even as the host, I just want to internalize the wisdom and not be the one to talk so much. So thank you so much for that. And you know, Robert Greenleaf actually says that the first and most important choice a leader makes is the choice to serve, without which one's capacity to lead is severely limited. And you can tell a lot of us love being served. We're the ones who love receiving and love belongs to call the shots, as they say. But a lot of us don't like serving. Even the greatest man who walked on this planet, Jesus, served the people who are around him. And for me, that's actually such a good example to follow. And even the leaders who actually serve, I think those are the best leaders. Because even with this podcast, people say that people do not care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that actually resonates with a lot of the things that go around us. Because at the end of the day, what we do for ourselves dies with us, but what we do for others lives on forever. So in whatever capacity you are in, be it church, school, home, family, even as a podcaster, content creator, artist, whatever you do, be great at it. And always remember, what do you have to show for it? Because again, I think for me, leadership is very dynamic. Leadership is not necessarily having to lead a large multitude of people. You can even be a leader of even one person. So whatever your hands find to do, be great at it. I guess you guys have learned something. Please don't forget to give us feedback, follow the socials, subscribe. And I'd love to hear your insights on this. Have a lovely week ahead and cheers.